Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a tech entrepreneur from India, Dr. Sukanth Khurana. Sukanth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Khurana is the founder and CEO of IonCure Tech Private Limited. He's a researcher in the fields of artificial intelligence and epilepsy. His work has been recognized. He has been recognized for his work in data privacy and ethics in the United States. And because of his work, he's been recognized and felicitated several times. So, Sukanth, let's start talking about IonCure Tech Private Limited. Tell me a little bit about the work you're doing and what got you interested in the intersection of AI and epilepsy.
Thank you. So we do quite a few things. So we are a 360 degree epilepsy company. Now, epilepsy, when I mention to people, they think niche segments, small disease. Actually, at least 1% people in India and globally have epilepsy.
Right.
In parts of India and actually in some parts of Africa, where there's a lot of infectious load, it's up to 4%. So, and even according to government of India, which tends to be conservative, it is draining $15 billion from Indian economy directly. You're not measuring in direct cost. So just in terms of work hours, work days lost of epileptics. Now there's indirect cost if somebody has epilepsy, their siblings or parents or, you know, kids will stay at home. So that's indirect cost, which is not being really measured. So if you think globally about epilepsy, there are between 65 to 80 million people, which is 1% of world's population. And epilepsy can in part also be controlled through diet, which is again something physicians are not very keen on, but it's well established. I'm not talking of some new study, isolated study or some hocus pocus thing. It's a keto diet has been there since 1920. All the major epilepsy foundations, Mayo Clinic, WHO all recommend it. So it's not something that I just stumbled on or, you know, the fact is it's just less promoted than because it doesn't have monetary benefits. But if you think of most Americans and the upper strata now of India also, I mean, including in my home, it's been ages. I have in younger days cooked to impress women. I haven't cooked in ages long now. So people who are upper middle class, they don't really cook in India. And in US, even middle class doesn't cook.
Right.
So if you're basically able to provide food for them, now you have cognitive challenges. Almost all epileptics have difficulty learning and remembering things and paying attention. Then you have emotional challenges. In fact, in some epileptics, I mean, not all epileptics, I must clarify, but in some epileptic kinds of epilepsies, the suicide and depression rate is 20 times higher than normal patient. So there is a huge emotional need. Then there is a scope in doing genomics of epilepsy to personalize things. There is brain surgery, brain stimulation. There's epilepsy alarm system, electronic records, maintaining diaries so patients can be cured better.
Right.
Like when they're going to doctor, they know, you know, when they are having seizure, is the medicine working or not? There can be dating for epileptics, invest at least, or even matchmaking in India and dating, because they have stigma and not everyone wants to date. And once they find out that somebody has epilepsy, they are abandoned. Happens a lot. I mean, it's actually used to be one of the leading causes of divorce in UK.
Right.
Other than finding out that the partner is homosexual, the second leading cause of divorce used to be finding that the partner has epilepsy, and it used to be considered as a valid reason to leave the partner legally in
so
a very long time.
Where does artificial intelligence come into this whole work that you are doing?
Yeah, so it comes into multiple points. So as I said, epilepsy is huge. It's a, actually, just to put a number, it is a $80 billion to $400 billion economy every year. If you count in food, education, not just medicine. So AI comes in if you're developing drugs. For example, we are developing drugs. And we started as a frugal startup. I mean, we're still now not very small, but we're not very big yet. So we, the way we made progress is we used to run various ion channel, basically structures and docking, molecular docking with them through modification of some compounds. So AI reduced the drug discovery load. Drug discovery is now being, having a watershed moment. It's completely transforming that it used to take 10 to 15 years to get a medicine out. 7-8 years of it is being cut down by AI.
Right.
And I have been lucky to land accidentally in this field wasn't the design, but to land accidentally in the field at the right time when it's undergoing transformation. So I've been doing that for not just epilepsy, and Ion Cure I'm doing for epilepsy. So that's drug discovery. The second thing is if you're matching. So, you know, matching algorithms are not high-end AI, but they're still AI. So when you're matching, let's say, for cognitive aid or for emotional aid of epileptics. So, you know, so they're all dating.
Right.
Now, then you think of alarm system. So if somebody is having a seizure at night, you want to detect. You need to have smart sensors, but you also need to detect and predict whether somebody is about to have a seizure. And then you would like to actually inform their near and dear ones. Let's say a kid is having seizure. You want the parents to wake up in the next room so, to prevent injuries and all that.
Right.
Then you also want, let's say if somebody has SUDEP, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. So patients die, like they go to sleep, they don't wake up next morning. And that's usually because of sleep apnea and then cardiac arrest. So if you have a AI system which is predicting, diagnosing seizure, it can be coupled with CPAP machine. In fact, this is just the latest of our projects which got funded.
Right.
So I came back successful from a pitching event and got funding and other support for it in clinical trials. So AI is involved in sort of every aspect. In fact, it can be even involved in designing nutrition.
Amazing. But then tell me, are there any potential risks associated with relying on AI for epilepsy treatment or prediction?
Absolutely, there are. So look, if you are looking at data for predicting seizures, most public domain data is from Caucasian population. Now, we don't know yet. We are starting to validate it in Indian population. We don't know it yet. So we are trying to make sure it's a dual system, which is relying not just on AI, but heavy human monitoring. So if AI is missing anything, can we have virtual monitoring or videos and all that? So population differences are there. The same differences will be there in genetics also, because epilepsy is usually not a monogenic disorder.
Right.
In some cases, you have a single gene mutation, but that's very rare. Usually, it's a combination of multiple gene mutations. Sometimes it's injury. Sometimes you have no clue what why it resulted or, you know. But so if you're trying to find the gene, we from our work itself, we know there are differences in populations.
Right.
So AI is as smart as the data set it's been trained on. And data set, because of US leading the show, has been on primarily white population, has been US data set, and in some cases European data sets. And in fact, even public data set are getting increasingly problematic because of privacy laws. So access to them is limited. So you in AI, you are as good as your data. Here in India, if government changes some policies, I mean, there's already very supportive government. I have no interest in discussing the politics of A party versus B party, but I'm saying in the last last 15 years, like, you know, different parties, the startup environment has been gradually built up. So the government is increasingly supportive of creating this network. So India, with its 1.4 billion population, can be a mecca of health revolution and minimizing errors from AI because of the population. We need to now use it responsibly.
But are there any ethical considerations when you're using AI for epilepsy research? And if so, how are you addressing them?
Yeah, so there are ethical concerns in the sense that, again, technology is a sword, right? You can use the nuclear reactors to generate electricity. You can also use the same technology to build bombs. So now, so the ethical consideration is, are you profit hungry or are you there to serve people? Because if you're profit hungry, what you'll do, let's say, let's run a thought experiment. I'm, let's say, making food for epileptics. I'm making more money from looking at sodium potassium balance. Because ketogenic diet puts it off balance. So you can't simply do it without supervision. But now if I increasingly just recommend randomly people to go to testing that, and every time I'm making 1,000 rupees, I can have the AI diagnose when are they like having certain activities where I can work on patients' fears, right? AI is heavily used to maximize profit, so it can be hugely unethical. So end of the day, having, I mean, my solution being a complete advocate of open market, and I've sort of swung from being center left to fiscally center right. I'm not again talking of social politics, but I realize the solution is not just regulation, it's heavy competition. If I'm the only player in epilepsy, eventually I can be evil. You know,
that's it.
So So you need good, healthy competition to make sure that the prices, the policies, so patients can compare. And then there must be information with patients to know if they are, you know, who's doing what. There has to be responsible health journalism and regulation to ensure patients' interest, regulation not to increase bureaucracy.
The other question, Sukanth, is that, you know, whenever we talk of anything to do with healthcare, the issue of data privacy and patient confidentiality comes up. How are you handling this and building it into your work that, you know, you're doing on epilepsy?
Yeah, so maybe because of my training in US, I did work at Texas, UT Austin, Northwestern, NYU, then Cold Spring Harbor. So I was in, used to environment of US. I've collaborated with Canada with very strict data privacy laws. So I was used to these things. So I always took consent, and I was actually laughed at that you're doubling your effort. So because I know 7-8 groups, I'm not going to throw them under the bus. But they just took data from hospital because they got the consent from PI to collaborate. So past data, while we actually have been taking every individual patient's consent, and now turns out that the government has passed a very good regulation in just August recently. So you cannot use patient data without individual consent. So, but that happened only in India so much later, which has happened in US 25 years ago.
Very interesting. Very interesting. My next question is that can artificial intelligence be used to uncover the root causes or triggers of epileptic seizures in certain patients?
Absolutely, yes. So now there are 4 or 5 different things. Let me start with genetics. So in genetics, it's finding like where is the Waldo, right, problem. That you have so many changes, you have so many mutations with no consequence. So if you just go through whole genome sequencing, which is now rather cheap, $100 to $200, real cost is analysis. Even if humans do very well trained humans, they can spend 20 years analyzing single genome. So AI is useful for analyzing that, comparing that. Earlier, when I was a student, looking back 23 years ago when I started doing it, we used to run just a comparison. I mean, that was simple, like alignment thing.
Right.
Now you can do at the same time millions of alignments, comparisons using AI, right? You could be accessing multiple databases. Earlier, we used to just compare a controls, you know, DNA strand with our strand. So we were matching that. Now you could be accessing million things and accessing all the genes. So you're finding out what changes are there. There's still some issues. In fact, I have some radical ideas which have been lingering simply because of company doesn't give you complete bandwidth to do that. I think you can use cellular signaling, not just a single gene, with each gene. In fact, this is an idea which I discussed with James Watson at Cold Spring Harbor. He was very impressed. A lot of things happened. I was being asked to work in US, and I stupidly at that time decided to come to India and, you know, do interesting stuff before doing very meaningful iron cure. It took a few years to find my purpose. But so you can use the genetics. Now, the other thing where you can use to identify is AI helps even fine-tune look at MRI data. So if somebody has injury-induced epilepsy or somebody has developmental disorders, so looking at MRI data, fMRI data, looking at structural changes or even functional changes when they're actually thinking. So AI is now turning out to be better than the best of the best neurologists.
Very interesting. My next question is, how close are we to having real-time AI systems that can alert patients or caregivers before an epileptic episode occurs?
So detection, we are there already. I'm actually now trying to raise capital to both two clinical trials. I had success in the sense of initial acceptance by one AIIMS to potentially consider us as a partner, and one government college, medical college in Uttar Pradesh. We're looking for some more partners. So that is already there, number one. Prediction depends on data set. Prediction, I would still say, for added value, we are 2 years away. But we may be in the market doing the detection for Indian population in 6 to 8 months, depends on what I'll say, vitamin M money. Right? So if you have more money, we can move. But in terms of technology, we are already there.
Right.
Fully there.
Right. And, you know, there's so much variable technology available. How can some of these variable technologies be integrated with AI to be able to manage epilepsy better amongst patients? Because you said a very large number of people have epilepsy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, detecting from any smartwatch is not a challenge. You just have to add small sensors, and some of them are already coming with it.
Right.
So, as a startup, one of the actually problems I see, maybe I'm a bit on the older side of doing a startup, mostly it's youngsters in 20s and 30s. So, I see that everyone has a desire to invent everything. In fact, most of the sensors and smartwatches already do 80% of the job. If
Right.
you just integrate with the smart, algorithm and all. So you can have skin conductance, even heart rate is a good detector of a seizure. You have muscle twitching, all of them are in most smartwatches.
Right.
What we are adding to it actually for advanced patients, so are basically electroencephalography, but not 64 channels which will cover your head. Very small, innocuous electrodes with wireless transmission to your cell phone. So
Right.
you're putting it under your hair, you have long hair, people don't even realize that there's a small electrode. So
Right.
if you have a focal epilepsy and you want to make sure that you do better prediction, because then it allows you to sit down, maybe take more medicine, have people around you to be vigilant that okay, this person is about to have seizure. So at least in the Western data set, we looked at Boston Children's Hospital data set, we looked at the major Scandinavian data set, we are able to predict quite in advance, which can actually save people's lives in a big way. And if you reduce seizure one time, it reduces the probability of next seizure happening.
Okay.
Because every seizure results in more brain damage and then further seizures.
Very interesting. So I have time for three more questions for you. Are there any misconceptions about AI's role in epilepsy that you would like to address?
Yeah, so there are quite a lot of misconceptions. I think the first one which I see from doctors is they say it takes years of experience. I'm like, yeah, but AI is able to take millions of years of experience in its training. So most doctors still don't realize that they are valuing the right thing. I'm just saying that, look, AI is 10,000 of you put together.
Right.
So, but a doctor assumes that AI is still, they're used to, using websites and all. They still don't understand that AI is not deterministic. AI is based on the learning.
Yeah.
Second thing I see from commercial angle, everyone is keen to see a patent. I'm like, if you freeze an AI, you can patent it. But if it is constantly learning on a patient, you cannot patent. So on the IP issues, especially in the Indian ecosystem, there are. So just to make sure, in fact, finally, because investors ask this question, so what we are doing is there is a component which is frozen. And there's a component which is patient specific, because if you go and you say we are unique, we don't want an AI, we don't want an IP, people will not invest. So there are some IP misconceptions, but you have to sort of play with the market also, because you can't just
Right.
simply be puritanical about it that you don't need it. So there are misconceptions on that side. And thirdly is on the efficacy. So most people haven't seen systems. AI is outperforming doctors in almost every single way. But people think, okay, so you'll do 50, 60% times well. I'm like, no, 99.98% times. So they're astounded by the numbers. So there are these three common
Right.
misconceptions.
Well said, well said. My next question is that how do you, Sukant, envision the future of AI in epilepsy diagnosis and treatment over the next 5, 7, 10 years?
Oh, it'll completely transform epilepsy care. We hope that. Not just this, even with later some mRNA therapeutics, which fortunately just 2 days ago, I mean, the Nobel that was given was related to RNA therapeutics, which resulted even in COVID vaccine. So even if you have gene related, let's say SLCA2, common gene or neurofibromatosis, can you have RNA therapeutics to make the person have normal RNA levels of phenotype? And in most of the cases, it looks like that you can fix it. So maybe for the first time in history, we'll not just be able to diagnose, prevent, manage the cognitive challenges in most patients. We can't say 100%, right? In some cases, there may be extreme issues. We may be able to manage most of the emotional issues with smart sensor tech, preventing depression-related symptoms, especially suicide, and actually designing therapeutics, not just for generic epilepsy, which even we are doing. So, for example, my company's first successful project where we got good funding was related to BK channel therapeutics. But that is for overall epileptics. But even patients with rare mutations, personalizing things. So I think in 10 years we'll be in a different, it'll be a different ball game altogether.
Very interesting. And my last question, Yusukant, and this is for the many people who will listen to our conversation. You have had such an amazing journey in the US, came back, did things that you may have wanted to do, and then became an entrepreneur. What would you say are three lessons you have learned as an entrepreneur that you would want our viewers and listeners to take away?
So I think it's taken a lot of beating, failing to realize that for every kind of venture there is a place. Like as I in before the interview was discussing that I'm doing other things other than epilepsy. I do a lot of AI, ed tech, and superfood now. So there is a right place to source. There's a right place to sell. There's a right place to find investors. I was trying to, in the beginning, do the same mistake I was doing as a professor, try to find everything in one place. So I think being mentally, not just physically mobile, knowing where you'll find the right collaborators, right investors, what's your market. So I think that's taken a bit of experience. Second thing which it has taken me is as an academic, it used to be frowned upon. I was still very, I would say, maybe self-assured, and maybe people would say, occasionally beating my own drum, but in academia, talking about your stuff incessantly used to be looked down upon. I have realized that if you're not talking about your startup, it's not your startup, then you may be just a passive investor. If it's your baby, you talk about your baby all the time, right? So I think second thing I've realized is I am sort of I'm not just I thought I'll be the scientist, I'll hire somebody for marketing. In my 4 years, I realize I'm the best person to market it because I keep talking about it. I mean, I'm not saying I don't need separate marketing people, but be an advocate. Third thing is to find various venues. In fact, we got a lucky break in the sense we weren't expecting it to be runaway success. Some physicians approached me that can we work on some aspect of epilepsy? We opened the door to one or two people, and then we have 4,000 books on Amazon, 500 documentaries, over 200 podcasts, including even less spoken languages like Sanskrit, because I could harness the power of citizen science. I have not seen startups do that. Now I'm able to harness the power of citizen science for data science in epilepsy. You won't believe just from an ad on LinkedIn, and half of them are like IIT, triple IIT kind of youngsters, that I have 2,800 plus applicants in just 5 6 day span. That once you develop a reputation that you're supporting youngsters, at least India is a place where there is more talent than there are opportunities. So, as a startup, not just relying on conventional models of outsourcing or doing things in-house, opening up a new model of citizen science for deep tech startups is a great way of reaching out. People get to notice you and also advancing low-end technology. With citizen science, obviously, they're not your full-time employees, so you can't do very involved thing, but you can do the thing which are similar in nature. I'll give you one small example. So for there is something called sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, SUDEP. So what we are saying is every state of every part of the world where we have data, what is the patient awareness? What is the doctor awareness? What is the policymaker awareness survey? What is being said on media and social media? Data scraping, natural language processing. So anyone with a degree in CS can do it or can be taught how to do it in a few days. And then we are doing resource analysis. How many doctors are there? How many nurses are there? So basically, the kind of science or technology which is not too innovative, very innovative stuff we do with employees, we do with our US collaborators, some are professors, some are in startup, but which is modular work, you can actually harness the power of citizen science like we did with doctors and now we are doing with engineers. So for me, that's been a huge cost thing. I mean, if imagine if I were to pay people the kind of number of people we have, that'll run up to 20, 30 CR. And my budget of running this operation was like 5 6 lakhs because I just hired employees to manage them.
Well,
And they are,
and on that note, Sukant, and your amazing lessons, I loved what you said. Every venture has a place. Be mentally mobile, find the right person for the right job. You also said be an advocate and talk about your company. I think this is such a powerful statement because I've seen many of us in India keep saying, let my work do my it's talking rather than me going and talking about it. So I think that's a very powerful comment that you have made. Thank you so much for talking to me about your journey. I think the work you are doing in being able to work with epilepsy using artificial intelligence is not only going to benefit a few people here, but probably will benefit people from all over the world. We didn't get a chance to speak about your other projects, including what you were telling me about you being wanting to build food-related products for the US market, but I'm sure we'll find another conversation for that. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck.
Thank you. And thank you, Ashutosh. It was amazing. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.